The calm that is the European Union was shattered last month with Russia's annexation of Crimea, Western sanctions, the massing of thousands of Russian troops on Ukraine's borders, and a general disbelief at the pivot in Europe to potential conflict. Jost Eisvogel is a longtime international relations correspondent for the well-known Dutch newspaper NRC Handelsblad. He's seen as a shrewd observer of European affairs on both sides of the Atlantic. So Great Decisions decided to ask him for a perspective from Europe on this unexpected state of affairs. Mr. Eisvogel spoke to me from his offices in Amsterdam. Here's our conversation. Russia, Ukraine, Crimea. How are Europeans viewing this? Is this a major topic of conversation? Is it a milestone, a crossroads? Give us some idea of how high this is in European visibility.
Well, I think it's pretty high up in the list of priorities and also in the list of things that people worry about. A number of European countries have a lot of internal issues. They talk and worry about local elections, problems with anti-immigrant sentiment, but also the Ukraine issue is really grabbing the attention of a lot of people, and it's on front pages, but it's also in news magazines every night on television, and people talk about it and people worry about it.
In America, there is a tendency now to say, all right, what's happened is happened, and let's move forward. Ukraine, those are Russian orbit countries. Is there any of that taking place in Europe?
Well, there is actually just a few days ago, the former German Chancellor Helmut Schmidt gave an interview in the Zeit newspaper saying that he really understood President Putin.
Uh-huh.
So he's sort of one of those who think, well, we should just move on and not make so much of a fuss about it. But I do think that is a minority. What is a major effect, let's say, since the end of the Cold War within Europe, there has been this sort of slumbering divergence of views on whether or not to consider Russia still as a threat.
Right.
You saw, of course, the new NATO members in the east of Europe.
Yes.
Like Poland and Hungary and Czech Republic, when they joined NATO, you know, they were the NATO members who were more worried about it, more worried than countries more in the west of Europe, like my own country, like the Netherlands.
Right.
I think what happened now after the annexation of Crimea is that Putin unintentionally has driven the European member states of NATO more together and
right.
NATO as such more together.
Right.
In understanding that they really should take the presence of Russia and the threat of Russia more seriously.
Right. But let me ask you, NATO is 28 countries. The United States is one of them. Do the Europeans think that if Mr. Putin advances beyond the Ukraine, let's say into the Baltic states, are the Europeans thinking that the Americans will send in the airborne and lift 100,000 troops into Europe to stop the aggression? I mean, where are they? Still counting on America, or is there more a self-reliance going on?
No self-reliance, I'm afraid. I'm very much relying on America, but I also think that everybody here in Europe agrees that this is not something that should end in a shooting war.
Okay.
People really hope that this will not be needed, and I don't think many people really think so far as to imagine what it would be like with American troops being flown into the Baltic states.
Right.
But NATO is sort of starting to show its real determination to defend its member states in the Baltics. President Obama, he's coming here to Europe in Brussels, having this speech in which he very clearly said, what should be clear from the beginning, from Article 5 of the NATO treaty, of course, that no NATO member state should ever be alone, and they always can count on the solidarity of the other NATO members. And
right.
That's both, I think, a signal from the American president to all the NATO members, and especially the members that are now worried about the situation, like the Baltics.
The Netherlands has seen a dramatic decrease in its defense budget. So have most other larger European countries. Do you think that what's taking place in the Crimea will reverse that? That the Europeans will begin to say that, hey, maybe we ought to crank up CSDP or take charge of our own destinies? Or do you think Europeans will continue to rely on the US?
I think that's a very interesting point. President Obama, when he came here, of course, in his speech in Brussels, he mentioned that. I mean, a little bit like every president who comes to Europe and every cabinet secretary who comes to Europe says that defense spending in European NATO member states should go up. But now, of course, with the added urgency of the situation in Crimea, in Ukraine. However, I do not agree with the large chorus of defense specialists and politicians who said immediately after the speech, look at that, yeah, now we should really immediately increase our defense budget, really answer that call from America, because I think that might be needed. But first of all, something else is more urgent, because over the last couple of years, support for NATO in many European countries has gone down. Afghanistan war, of course, it became less and less clear for many people in Europe and probably also in America what NATO actually was doing there and what NATO is for. So now, I think before you start talking about increasing the budgets, you should create really sort of a support for NATO and an understanding what NATO is for in the first place.
Right.
And I think that is a long-term but very important task that NATO has before it right now, to make clear what its purpose in life is.
But I mean, NATO's been coming out with these plans every 4 years, right? Strategic visions and so on. You don't think it's been doing that?
I don't think that has really done the job of really explaining to a larger public what NATO is for.
Okay.
You could see in a country like the Netherlands here that abolished all its battle tanks, just like that. You know, there was no real political debate about that. So there was not really a strong political voice in Parliament even trying to prevent that, because it was, you know, it was not a big issue. It was sort of easy money. And that is not because these politicians are sort of irresponsible. It's because they feel that their voters don't care about defense and NATO. So they should really use this opportunity, not immediately to raise the budget, but to talk about what NATO is for and really get people to be interested again in what this alliance and what these other countries mean for our common security.
You've been listening to a conversation with Mr. Jude Eisvogel on behalf of the Foreign Policy Association and Great Decisions. This is Sarwar Kashmiri. Thank you for listening.